What's up, everybody? Sam Franco here with a special Mouths of the South podcast, an OG edition, as I am very, very happy to be joined by one of the original hosts of this podcast, Jason Smith. Jason, it's been a while. Thank you so much for joining me. How you doing?
I'm great, man. It has been a while. It's a lot of memories of days of yore now in this season of holidays, you know?
That's absolutely right.
It's good to think back. It's a good time to be thinking back on those things in a happy way and not a deathly tragic way.
No doubt. That's what we're usually used to in terms of sport and looking back on things, being a state of Georgia sports fans, Atlanta sports fans, however you want to term it. You know, we're used to looking back on things with a little bit of negativity, but not the case as Atlanta United, in only their second season, are MLS Cup champions. And you wrote a great article on DirtySouthSoccer.com, kind of just about what this has meant to you and sort of your journey through all of this. And it brought back so many great memories of, you know, us doing the show from the pub right next to the Charleston Battery Stadium before that Charleston and Rangers match, to Alexi Lalas calling in after the, yeah, the Chattanooga game to when you and Eric were doing that show. I mean, we did an episode of the podcast called Zlatlana where we tried to convince everyone that Atlanta United should sign Zlatan. So, I mean,
And we thought we were ridiculous at the time, and then lo and behold, he, like, ended up in MLS anyway.
That's right. I mean, if it kind of figured that was going to happen. We didn't know, you know, obviously Atlanta seemed like a pipe dream, and it was, and he's been great in L.A., but we've been doing just fine in Atlanta, and I guess first and foremost what I would want to ask you is, you know, how did you take in the game, and how – I guess because it's weird watching in a press box, you know, you can't really react emotionally. I remember when I finally got into the bowels of the stadium, when we were kind of walking to the locker room after the game, I was walking next to our man Sam Jones, and I just kind of yelled, like belted out a guttural like yell, because I hadn't been able to do that all match. So obviously that was kind of refreshing to be able to get that out there. But how did you take Atlanta United's win in?
Well, I think that's a good question, because it's sort of an underlying dynamic of this piece and why I thought about the memories that I did. It's because I've sort of been an Atlanta United fan from a distance. Like, I took in the game as I take in most matches, which is in my basement living room in Nashville. You know, I've never actually, this might strike people as odd, I've never actually been to an Atlanta United match physically, like never been to one. And it's a testament kind of to the community that this team has, that I still feel very much like I'm a part of this, deep enough to write, you know, like 3,000 words on how much it's meant to me. So I took it in with sitting next to my wife, watching it on TV. My wife, like, you know, supports the team, but mostly just sort of like watches me freak out as a sport of hers. And you know, it was a remarkable experience to sort of look around and go, like, this is how ordinary it was. You know, it's like, this is real. This is a real thing that can actually happen. That, like, a team that I love can win a championship, and it didn't take, like, you know, a blood sacrifice or something. Like, it just happened. And so, you know, I was emotional, which is good that I wasn't in public, you know, very much for, like, Miguel Almiron, who's meant so much to, like, me personally as being, like, someone that my kid knows who he is. And then emotional just for, like, the state of Georgia. And I get into a good bit of that in a piece about, like, how this team has changed, I think, at least, what, like, some of the overlooked and forgotten people in Georgia now get to dream about, you know? It changes a ton for, like, sports in this state. And I think that we're still going to be processing that meaning even, you know, years, decades from now.
Yeah, and you look at the way the game kind of unfolded, and you mentioned that sort of regularity and how you felt. It's like, hey, this is supposed to happen. You know, this is not something that is going to be, like, ripped out from under us, or there's no Lucy ripping the football away from Charlie Brown here. I mean, this is actually going to happen. And getting to the game itself, I mean, it really felt like Before the game and in the build-up to it, I was very much worried about Portland as a team that I thought would be a bad matchup for Atlanta United. But when the game was actually played, Portland looked toothless, and I'm not 100% sure what the reasoning for that was. You know, was it what Atlanta was doing? Was it the crowd? Was it the fact that Portland just didn't really have a game plan to attack Atlanta United? I mean, there were a number of different factors, I think, that played into it. And the biggest one I just thought that was Atlanta United did what I kind of said going up to the run-up to the game. If Atlanta United plays their game and plays as well as they have been playing, they're going to win the game. And that's kind of seems like that's what happened.
Yeah, it's definitely what happened. Like my thought going into it was, I was with you as well, that I was like Portland, especially with Chara and some of their other, like their good defensive midfield, like they could go into a block and park the bus, and Atlanta could have a really tough time against them. And in my opinion, they kind of played us the way I think you needed to. Atlanta sort of had a whole conflagration, a perfect storm of like bad things that could have happened. Like Portland, I thought, came out, and instead of parking the bus all the way back on their own end, as New York did, they parked the bus in the middle of the field and said, we're going to press you in the middle of the field and try to get possession away from you. And they also had a referee that was letting things go the entire match, which Atlanta did not fare well under. And despite all of that, Atlanta dominated the game. And at the end of the match, the only thing you were left thinking was that could have been like 4-0 rather than just a 2-0 win. And it, you know, it's a testament to this team, I think, that just like, yep, instead of it being that Tata can't make adjustments, there's a press on and we don't know what to do with it. We can't break teams down. This was a team that peaked at the exact right time and was thoroughly deserving, I think, to be not only Supporters Shield champions, and we can talk about that later, but definitely MLS Cup champions.
Absolutely. And I was talking with a couple of different people about the way that sort of the match unfolded, and it was a very Atlanta United match. You know, the first goal was just brilliant from Michael Parkhurst, in a sense that, you know, he came out after the game saying that basically the way that goal came about was he studied the tape, and that Ebo Bise had some tendencies with his his back to his own goal, or kind of in that sort of scenario in terms of the direction he may go, and Parkhurst judged his tackle based on that. So for a city in Atlanta that has not so good of a history of athletes being students of the game, I really look at Michael Vick and his time in Atlanta, where he said he basically just took the DVDs of film on him, threw them in the back of his trunk, and never watched them. So just interesting to finally get that dynamic from, you know, a goal happened because the guy watched the tape.
Yeah, I mean, we got to admit, too, that Michael Vick is a special case in that regard.
That's fair.
You know, like, I think that the thing about Atlanta has been that, like, you can do all the tape study you want, and it doesn't matter. Like,
that's
you can't
fair.
Overcome the curse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like that Michael Parkhurst would have known that and then tried to do that, and instead of the ball careening beautifully to Joseph, it would have somehow, like, hit the crossbar from the Portland Timbers goal and flown into our net or something. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff that happens to Atlanta. And that again, I think, is why it was so shocking to watch a very ordinary Atlanta United win in a huge moment where things could have gone so awfully wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Those things worked. Like, a tape study led to a meaningful goal, and like all of the hard work that, you know, these guys pour in, and especially for Michael Parkhurst, who'd been to MLS Cup so many times and come away empty-handed. And in some dramatic ways, like I'm thinking in particular, Portland winning off Columbus went off a goal where the ball clearly went out of bounds and into touch. You know, that kind of stuff, it just doesn't happen. And it is a wonderful thing to sort of like sit and reflect on as kind of a, you know, what has just changed that made this happen. But I think it was just, you know, this team was just better.
Absolutely. And then goal number two was just so well worked. Typical South American style set piece where you have the delivery in and the flick to the back post. And Joseph did such a phenomenal job with that flick on. And I'm sure, you know, Eric and I were talking about this, maybe the more uneducated eye, and I don't want to sound like soccer snob when I say that, but there were some people out there that probably didn't realize that was a pass. you know, because he's putting the header on, and people are like, oh, that's a wayward header. And it's like, no. He knew exactly what was happening with Escobar running to the back post, and we can talk about that in a little bit in terms of Escobar's just ridiculous run of form on the back.
Has anybody had a better 2 weeks in the world than Franco Escobar, man?
Yeah, exactly. But just in terms of that second goal, I mean, a beautiful, beautiful set piece, one that you can tell that Tata Martino had drilled into their heads.
Yeah, and like that, I think that's a testament to, you know, Tata struggled to adjust in certain times this past year to, especially the Red Bulls across his career. But, you know, I think it's clear that those are the sorts of goals that we didn't think Atlanta would ever be all that good at. And they have obviously become very good at them, which is a testament to like his legacy in the city, is that like he took a team where, we're going to just run at you. We're going to play high press. We're going to, play like heavy metal football in a South American style. And we won't really need all that much set piece discipline. You know, we take short corners that drive people crazy.
Gross, short corners.
Yeah, right. but then in the biggest moments when he needed somebody to stand and take a spot kick, Miggy Almiron hit one of the best free kicks in MLS history. And then when he needed like a set piece goal against a team that's obviously going to try to bunker and take you to penalties, he got one. And that is, again, testament to the team working really hard, things actually going right when you practice them, and also Tata Martino just like really cementing his legacy as one of the better coaches in MLS history, I think.
Yeah, and speaking of Tata Martino, there was a lot of backlash against him when the news came out that he wasn't going to come back, and how he had kind of said he doesn't have any representation and he wasn't talking to people, but we kind of found out that wasn't exactly true. Just because while he doesn't have an agent, he certainly has family members and certainly has well-connected people that were kind of reaching out here and there. So it did feel like maybe he was misleading the fans, misleading Atlanta United a little bit, although the club and him both said that everything was transparent. But certainly even me, like I went on our show on the radio that we do on the SportsX, and it was just I was very upset because it just kind of felt like all of this could have been handled better in terms of things leaking out and things like that, and I thought it could negatively impact the team, and it seemed like it did against Toronto. But looking back on it, you know, I ate a lot of crow on this, just admitting to being wrong, and not only admitting to being wrong, but the team bouncing back from that awful loss against Toronto to have excellent games against NYCFC and the Red Bulls and really control MLS Cup against Portland. I thought Tata did a phenomenal job of rallying the troops, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, after that Toronto match, I was ready to come out and be Tanaka from Major League Two and say, you guys have no marbles. You know, like, y'all got no heart. Like, I was so angry after that match. And looking back on it, though, I think that match is more indicative of, and I'll talk about Tata. I was like, Tata has some edges, obviously. You know, like, he's not entirely smooth. Like, I think you're right that they were probably in the wrong a little bit to not be fully transparent. And I guess when they say the process is transparent, what they mean is the process is transparent enough. And that, you know, that's acceptable, I guess. It's obviously made way better by winning a championship. But, you know, I hope Tata, well, I say I hope Tata will do good things. I actually hope Tata's next phase in his career will be terrible because he's going to the Mexican national team. But,
boo.
You know, I would hope. So, in other words, Tata, we love you, but we also now will root against you every time we ever see you. You know, I think that the Toronto loss to me was something I've been thinking about, and I think it speaks to how important the fact that we were in that situation where you have to win against Toronto to claim the supporter shield. That shows you how important Miguel Almiron is to this team, that like the team just did not, and it was true last season too, this team just does not work without him, or at least it doesn't work in any of the ways that Tata really wants it to work and makes it the most effective. And so the biggest question facing this team now, I think, is like, okay, good, we won. We can reflect on how great that is. But sort of like what now? The heartbeat of the team, it seems to me, the whole piece that makes this entire thing work is gone, we assume. And so now what comes next for Atlanta United 2.0? That's the biggest question facing this front office, which, you know, God, they managed to bring a championship to Atlanta, and now they have to rebuild the entire team, basically, because one player's leaving.
Yeah, exactly. And not only is it one player, you know, leaving, it's the most important player, or at least the one that kind of gets the attack going. I did have someone posit the idea to me that maybe Darlington Nagbe is a little more important just in terms of the way that he switches the ball from defense to attack. I think that they are both, like, it's almost like the an axis. You know, when you're talking about a wheel, you're not really going to get very far on one wheel, but two wheels is definitely going to help you. And I almost feel like they're the two wheels of a bicycle, so to speak. But
yeah, I mean, I think the team, in the absence of Darlington, though, the team could still basically do what it wanted to do. It could still attack really well, create chances, and it was a little bit made up for the fact that we couldn't get out of our own end sometimes because we didn't have Darlington to just latch onto the ball and be impossible to get it off of.
Right.
But without Miggy, we really look like a shell of a team.
Exactly.
Through those last couple of weeks. And that's what's concerning to me, is that, like, this is the most challenging player personnel question Darren Eales probably has faced yet, other than just not having a team and creating one from scratch. So I'll be curious to see how they decide to answer it.
Or when they had to start Christensen in goal. And let me reiterate, sure. Atlanta United won MLS Cup in a season they had to start someone named Christensen in goal.
The true D track of the 2018 season is starting Christensen in goal.
That's right. That's right. But I think Miguel Almirón is going to be a very good player wherever he goes. It looks like Newcastle may be the destination. I'm not the biggest Rafa Benitez fan. You're a Liverpool guy, so you may have way more insight on that. But I just don't think I wouldn't want one of my favorite players going to play for that guy. But that's just my own personal opinion.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, I wasn't a supporter of Liverpool back in the Benitez days, so I kind of have like a, you know, I'm supposed to like this guy, but I don't like them. I don't like that spot for him either, honestly. To be frank with you, I'd much rather see him go to West Ham, which is a weird thing to say. Usually you'd think that Newcastle would be the better spot, but Newcastle look like they're really ready if they don't get something going quick to go down. Mm-hmm. And I think Almirón in the championship is just that's a terrible thought. He'd just be hacked all day long. He'd be lucky to get out of there with legs.
Yeah, that would be a weird league for him, certainly. But in terms of replacing that production, you know, Ezequiel Barco is a guy who I think we found out pretty quickly this season, his style just didn't mesh with Almirón's, and they were not going to be able to effectively play in the same midfield. And we saw that because most of the time when Almirón would get subbed off, it would be Barco coming in for him, and that would sort of change the way the team played because Barco is much more methodical, much more possession-based, whereas Almirón is that guy that wants to get out and get that attack going, run right at defenders, run right at the goal and disperse to your players running wide alongside you, whereas Barco is way more methodical, way more deliberate, and at times that gunked up the works of what Atlanta United wanted to do. So Tata figured out that I can't play these two guys at the same time, but now that Almirón's going to be gone, they spent a lot of money on Barco. I'm sure they're going to want to give him that opportunity, but you've got PT Martinez coming in as well, so that's kind of going to be a battle there, I think, in terms of who gets that spot.
Yeah, I mean, they seem like they're pretty similar in as far as they both play. Barco always struck me as whenever he would come in, Atlanta suddenly looked much more like a Liga MX team. And I think that And obviously, Almirón did not look like that at all.
No.
And so I think that trying to blend, if there's a way to blend Barco and Pitti in there, then that'll be interesting. It would strike me that, like, you're right, they paid a ton of money for Barco. It would really look bad on the organization, I think, if Barco turned out to be a major bust. I actually think that if Barco busts, it's not a good thing, obviously, but it's like that's the kind of stuff that should be happening more in MLS. Like, MLS should have these guys that are like crazy overpaid for and don't pan out, because that's what happens in other, like, the great leagues in the world.
Well, you want to take the chance, too. You want, Atlanta United at least showed initiative in spending the money and going out and getting the player.
Exactly, and he's obviously a talented player. Like, he can play ball. Like, that'll be honestly a task for the new manager. It's like, okay, Tata brought his style. He had three designated players that were basically tailor-made for that style. This next manager won't get that, but he will have pieces that he can use to, you know, that he needs to use to the best, to be the most effective. And I'll be curious to see how that manager decides Barco's best role is.
Yeah, absolutely, and where he fits in. I think, honestly, if you're going to put him in Almiron's role, then you're going to be changing a lot of what this team does. So
you think a new style of play is probably coming, honestly.
If they're
set on saying, we're going to go with Barco and we'll add Martinez, the other Martinez, the winger Martinez, in as a new signing, then you have to think, okay, we're going to change styles. It's not going to be Verticalidad, you know, Verticalidad. It's going to be like, okay, more methodical maybe, more possession-based. You know, we'll have to see.
And it's unfortunate, too, because I think a lot of people have grown accustomed to watching Atlanta United play the way that they play, and you wonder if maybe more of a like-for-like in terms of replacing Almiron, you wonder if they went after a player that was similar to him in terms of his style, if that would be better for the team, and not necessarily changing too much, because you still have a Joseph Martinez that needs that kind of player in behind him. You still have a Tito Villalba who is so great at running at defenders and causing havoc out wide. So you've still got the formula to kind of do some of the same things you've been doing other than that one gaping hole.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like having a Porsche but just driving it around in town.
You know? Right,
I think
that
they're gonna eventually look up and say, okay. And this is what was so tough about the Barco signing, is that if that really is what he does best, then you look up and I think it was a testament again to Tata's prowess as a manager to say, okay, we got to put you on the bench. You know, like, I know we paid a ton of money for you, but like, this is how we play as a team. It's what works. It's what we're effective at. And honestly, the thing that's really key is it's the best style for Joseph to score goals in. And that will be, I think, the key dynamic to work on next season, is assuming that Joseph stays, which I think he will, but assuming that he stays, can you take a new style of play and still keep Joseph as effective at scoring as he has been under this style? That's the question for me.
Exactly, because Joseph is the focal point, and you've got to make sure that you're playing a style that gets the most out of him, because just keep in mind, he's also a striker. They're temperamental, and if you have a run of games where you're not playing an attractive style and you're not getting him the ball in good positions, we've seen him check out before. You know, he hates the long ball game because you don't want to always be running after long balls. So there's certainly some things that they have to be careful for in terms of really making sure that he is comfortable. And that, look, strikers are divas, and sometimes you got to cater to them. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, particularly one that just scored 35 friggin' goals.
I was going to say, you really can't show up and tell the guy with, like, every trophy from the season sitting in his case that, like, we're going to go away from the thing that makes you most effective, you know? Like, when you win, like, you win the equivalent of, like, the player's treble of, like, every MVP you could possibly win, and then also have a championship trophy in the case, you can probably walk in and say, I would like to make sure that I'm still being fed properly with goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing, too, you got to look at with Joseph, we're talking about Tata's legacy. Joseph Martinez becomes only the, I guess, the fifth Atlanta professional sports icon, personality, whatever, to win an MVP. Dale Murphy did it twice. You had Terry Pendleton, you had Chipper Jones, and you had Matt Ryan do it pretty recently. So Joseph Martinez jumps to number five, you know, on that list. Where, in terms of just single season performances, I mean, where would you stack him up? I mean, I know it's kind of hard. Terry Pendleton kind of came out of nowhere in terms of, he was a guy who a lot of people thought was a surplus to requirements, kind of a cast off with the Cardinals, and comes in and has a phenomenal 91 season. Chipper's season in 99 speaks for itself. Dale Murphy won him back to back. But, I mean, Joseph Martinez just had the single greatest season in MLS history, and some people would say arguably. I don't think that's arguable. And I think you also look at the fact that he took home the MVP, the MLS Cup MVP, the Golden Boot, and the team won the championship. you know, it's pretty hard to argue against Joseph as having the single greatest season any Atlanta athlete has ever had, just because none of the other ones won the title the year that they won their MVP.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that would be the key distinguishing factor. And, I think the better comparison is not baseball here, because baseball, you do it over – I mean, I guess that soccer does have a long season in some of the way that baseball does, but it always strikes me that baseball is so much more numbers-driven. There's so many more ways to excel numbers-wise in baseball than there are in soccer. And so I would think – I'm mostly thinking in terms of, like, football seasons of players who've had, like – this one great season. You think of Matt Ryan and, like, yeah, everybody would tell you they'd give back the MVP pretty easily in order to get a Super Bowl trophy from the Falcons. I think that makes Joseph's season all the more special, that he got the MVP trophy, got the other MVP trophy, set a single season record in the only category that really matters, and then won a championship.
Yeah, exactly. So I think bottom line is, you know, Joseph brought home the ultimate goal. You have all of the individual accolades, but the most important one is the collective accolade that is winning the trophy. Now, you look at Atlanta United, they're the champs. They're in a weird spot now going forward. They're going to have to replace, as we've talked about, Miguel Almirón. But it's almost more, you know, the thing that I'm more interested in, because that stuff will, those dominoes will fall where they may. But I'm more interested in how the team operates going next year. And I'm not talking about on the field. I'm talking about more off the field in terms of fan engagement, in terms of all that stuff, because you've got the hottest ticket in pro sports in Atlanta right now. You just won a championship. How do you capitalize off that? How do you generate new fans? How do you appease your old fans? I think that the front office has a huge job to do here in terms of keeping the momentum of the club going.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think it strikes you how fragile this stuff is, you know, that this stuff showed up overnight, and it also speaks to the fact that it can, I don't think it'll ever go away per se, but it could certainly take a downturn, depending on how the team performs and depending on their outreach. You know, we averaged, you know, something, God knows, something like 50 grand, a game. We've put 76 in the stadium before. Or at least 70 plus in the stadium before, that can go away. I mean, especially if Atlanta ends up being like a bottom table team during transition, you know, like I wouldn't pay the sort of money that they'd be asking for to go see Atlanta struggle to keep up with the Revs or something, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're right. It's definitely a big task for them. I think one of the benefits of soccer in this area is that you are constantly going to have new signings. Like in football and so basketball, I think is a little bit closer to this, in that like the Hawks turn over a lot. There are new players to go and see, new styles of play to go watch, to see if any of these guys are the answer. Soccer functions more like that, in that we're going to constantly, even if, you know, we get a new style of play, we stick with Barco, there are always going to be these new guys coming in that you get to watch, young players showing up. I personally really excited to watch George Bello next season.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's going to be so much fun to watch. And hopefully Andrew Carlton, you know, don't know about that, but hopefully we'll see the emergence of Andrew Carlton as well. So, you know, soccer has a built-in advantage for the front office that there's always new things to promote. You don't have to just, you know, the Falcons, you know, can go with the tried and true, like come see Matt Ryan sling it around the field a lot, Julio Jones and stuff. And there's something to, like, a staying power of a star. But there's also something, too, like there are these new world-class athletes coming in every two seasons or so that we get to go see. And they're going to be gone soon, too, so get it while it's hot, you know? So I think the front office has that working to their advantage, and they've proven they can do it from scratch. So I trust them now to maintain engagement.
You know, you were saying earlier in the podcast that you have never seen an Atlanta United match in person. Well, you will have a much closer chance as Nashville comes into the league next year. So Atlanta right now, his closest rival is Orlando. With Cincinnati and Nashville coming into the league, you've got, actually right now, it's funny, the closest drivable ballpark for the Braves right now is the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. That just blows my mind how that's the case. So now you'll add some, you know, Nashville will be the closest rival. So you've got Nashville and Orlando kind of in that southeast thing. But it's just crazy to me how sort of Atlanta started as. I know Orlando was there before Atlanta, but nobody considers Florida or Orlando the South. So that team of the South in Atlanta, and you're going to add one in Nashville. There's rumors about maybe Carolina, a Charlotte or something like that. Then down the pipe. So it's just crazy to me how we're going to actually have a reasonably drivable rival next year. And what do you think in terms of, I know that a lot of Orlando fans think that the rivalry was sort of fabricated just because Atlanta was close. Do you think that Atlanta fans make it that way about Nashville?
I mean, they might. Nashville, as you say, kind of has this odd little, like, we're in a very weird regional spot. When I first moved up here, almost 10 years ago now, I would turn on my regional Fox Sports to watch baseball, and I'd be shocked at, like, the Reds were on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why, like, we're in the South, like, the Braves should be on the TV. What's going on here? But you're exactly right. Like, the closest drivable stadium from Nashville was either Atlanta for the Braves, but also we're really close to Cincinnati. So there is this weird melding of fan bases here that I think is going to do very well for soccer, very similar to Atlanta vibe. I think that Nashville is going to – we're going to have to wait and see what the ownership does. Like, I think fan-wise, I'm sure that the rivalry will be there. They might also look to Cincinnati as one of their rivals, since you always look to the team that you came in with.
Yep.
Like, we thought Atlanta v. Minnesota was going to be a really fun rivalry kind of, but it turns out that Minnesota's terrible. And, that's the thing, too, just speaking about these new ownership groups coming in and thinking about Minnesota, is that MLS – to me, stands on like a bit of a knife edge in that, okay, what effect is Atlanta winning this championship going to have? Are we going to force ownership groups like Minnesota, who are frankly fleecing their supporters out of money just to put a miserable product on the field? Are those tactics still going to be allowed to stand if you can just, almost make the playoffs every year? Will that be a similar tack to what Nashville and Cincinnati do? Because we don't know what their DP signings are going to be, but that's what I'm watching closely, is to see, Nashville SC this time around in USL was a root canal of a team. They were all defense based. They were counterattack. They parked the bus a lot. If they do that in MLS, I think they could pose some tactical problems for Atlanta, but I wouldn't see them as like a budding rivalry other than the fact that we're close. And look, I embrace the just cross-state rivalries. I think they're fun. I'm not going to make fun of Nashville people if they're all like, yeah, Atlanta's our real rival. We'll just have to see if they end up becoming a team worthy of producing, like a team that can produce matches worthy of calling it a rivalry. Thus far, Minnesota has proven they cannot do that. Orlando has proven they can do that every now and then. It looks like it's more a passionate rivalry amongst like Atlanta fans just disliking what Orlando is versus the teams actually playing really well. If there was a rivalry Atlanta really showed up into, it was with the Red Bulls. And maybe New York and maybe NYCFC. But I would be very interested in seeing like what Nashville versus Cincinnati is going to become, especially if they adopt, if they end up playing like, just an upgraded USL team. Because then those matches could be quite fun.
Jason Smith, former host of this very podcast, one of the co-hosts at least of the Mouths of the South. And I really only have one more topic to hit, and it's the CONCACAF Champions League. And it provides such an interesting dilemma for Atlanta. You're the defending MLS Cup champion. So there's the desire to defend that trophy. But there's also CONCACAF Champions League, and it's one reason I'm very disappointed that Tata's leaving, because I thought one more season in Atlanta to give him the chance to go navigate through the CONCACAF Champions League would have been interesting. But if you had to ask me, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, which tournament would you rather win next year, or which one should Atlanta United put more into, I'd say CONCACAF Champions League, because you've already got the MLS Cup. And CONCACAF Champions League is uncharted territory. No MLS team has ever won it. And for Atlanta to be that team that could possibly win it and go on to the Club World Cup, I think those are the kinds of ambitions that Darren Eales and Arthur Blank and the Brain Trust have with this club.
Yeah, I would say the exact same. I think that, especially as you see what FIFA is is floating out there about reforming the Club World Cup, making it a much bigger event. That's where you start thinking about, like, Atlanta United could play Real Madrid in a match that technically matters.
Yes.
You know, and so I would very much say put all your eggs in the CONCACAF Champions League basket. And this is also why fans should be prepared that if that's what they do, that this season could go pretty poorly. Because if you look at what Toronto did, Toronto got to the final of the CONCACAF Champions League last year, but it tanked their entire season.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were done after that. They with all their talent, with Giovinco still being one of the most dynamic players in the league, I mean, they were just toast after that. So Atlanta could face a similar thing where we test our squad depth to a good extent, but also, like, we really sell out for it. It exhausts you based on the travel and the really inconvenient timing of it, and we just don't ever really come back from it. We could foreseeably go from MLS Cup champions to missing the playoffs if that's what we decide to do. And that wouldn't, depending on how far you get in the CONCACAF Champions League, that wouldn't necessarily make the season a failure. It would just make the season a success based on the priorities that you set. And so I hope, as you do, that they sell out on two things, that they sell out on winning the Open Cup, since that's a trophy we don't have, or at least play the kids as hard as possible during that time.
Yeah.
And we hopefully make a deeper run. And then they go after the CONCACAF Champions League, because that is, you know, we thought that maybe we could be one of the first sides to win an MLS Cup in our expansion year. That didn't happen. But you can for sure, cement your legacy as a unique MLS franchise if you're the only one to ever conquer that mountain. And that's the last thing Atlanta has to go for, other than just, like, you know, stacking up MLS Cup championships. But the CONCACAF Champions League is the last mountain to climb for MLS, and I think they should certainly go for it.
Absolutely, and I'm sure that MLS, I'm sure Don Garber was telling Arthur Blank and telling Darren Eales that same thing when he saw them this past weekend for MLS Cup. He's probably saying, hey, you guys look like maybe the best chance we've ever had. Like you said, Toronto put a lot into it and came up just short. But Atlanta seems to have the mix of players and style that will do well in that tournament. And in particular, you know, Atlanta's done so well with conquering all of these statistics, these records that Atlanta has some ridiculous. Is it like the top seven attended matches all time in MLS or something like that? I mean, it's something ridiculous like that. And then they just had the highest ever attended MLS Cup. Their attendance at MLS Cup, over 73,000, is more than the last four Super Bowls. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that this club has done, and Arthur Blank loves being that trailblazer. I'm sure Darren Eales as well. But again, we hit it pretty hard there. Becoming the first club to do it, especially so young, especially since none of the blue bloods, the tried and true, the since day one MLS clubs, none of them have been able to do this. And so Atlanta United would just, pardon my French, piss more people off by, you know, just doing something else that nobody else could do in a very short amount of time.
We should also do it soon, because there's talk that the Champions League itself may be going away, that we might be moving more towards we're just going to make a giant Copa Libertadores tournament.
Yeah.
Which I am all for, by the way. That would be excellent. And then there's a new mountain. If that's what happens, then it's like, oh, hey, there's a new mountain to climb. Can you go to Boca Juniors and get a result? You know, throw it back to the first joke the podcast ever have. Can you go to Carlos Boca Juniors and get a result?
And if anybody can
build a team to do it, you got to think that Carlos Boca Juniors and Darren River Plate can get it done.
That's so crazy how those names work out like that. But I know, in all seriousness, I think that you're totally going to have an Atlanta team that's pretty focused on at least trying to be the first team to win that tournament. But a lot of the fans, you know, that's the hardest part, is that a lot of fans, you know, Atlanta does have a lot of new-to-soccer fans who might not, like you alluded to, understand, like, what they're doing, you know. And people might be like, hey, why are they having such a bad season or whatever, if it does come to that. And it's like, well, you got to look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how regular season form suffers, if this also provides an opportunity for some of the younger guys or even some of our depth guys to make a statement and buy, you know, make a contribution to the team when you need to rest guys after a trip to Costa Rica or El Salvador.
How dare you call Kevin Kratz a bench guy?
Yeah, right. It's like Kevin Kratz, Kevin Kratz is the only player I trust that could reliably kick a ball from any distance and still hit me square in the face. So, I apologize to the Kratz, but I think that we'll be doing. What I would say is that probably in the regular season you'll see a lot more Kevin Kratz free kicks if we decide to sell out to the CONCACAF Champions League.
All right, Jason, before I let you go, this has been great. We'll have to do it again before the season. But in your wildest dreams, when we started doing this podcast, we're talking about Zlatlana, and we're having Alexi Lalas on, and we have no idea what we can talk about for an hour, but we push through it anyway. in your wildest dreams, did you think this team would be where they are two seasons in?
That's tough, because I think the answer is kind of no and yes. It's no because we're all Georgia sports fans. We assume that things are going to go terribly, even when we're faced with overwhelming evidence that our team is certainly the MLS Cup favorite. We think there's, in that stadium, against an opposition side that's playing more defensive, something's going to go wrong. We saw it happen last season in the playoffs. Like, surely something's going to go bad. So, in a sense, like, no, never in my wildest dreams did I think a Georgia club could come from nothing to arguably set to be at least an MLS Cup contender for the next, I don't know, 5 or 6 seasons. It looks like you're going to be thinking about us as a dark horse to get in. The other side of me, though, is like, yes, you could, because I'm always torn between saying one of two things, and I don't want to insult Darren Eales at all when I say this, but I'm always torn with the idea that, like, is it that, like, we're so good now because Darren Eales and Arthur Blank and Carlos Bocanegra just had a moment of sheer genius where they put together a culture and an institution that functioned perfectly to take a product from nothing to on the field to championship levels? Or is it also that, maybe even at the same time, what Atlanta United has proven is that if you follow this strategy, it is not that hard to be really, really good in MLS. That MLS now has finally got the catalyst in Atlanta United to push it to become the league it always tried to say it was, which is that we buy young talent, we have talent enough to push the old guys looking to retire out of the league, as they did with my dear Stevie G, with Frank Lampard, with Pirlo. Is it the case? So maybe 2 years ago, what I would have said is that, like, had I known how good these people were going to be at building this institution, I would have said, of course you can get here in 2 years. We were actually, I might have been frankly surprised we didn't get there in 1 year, because MLS seems to have been a league for the taking. And I don't mean that to take anything away from the front office, because, look around you guys, we took it. Like, we showed up and we took it. And that's a remarkable achievement, given not only that you did it within the first 2 years, but also that you did it in a sport culture where we just assume we're going to lose most of the time. So to long answer for that is, like, no and yes. In my personal wildest dreams, would I have ever thought my team would win a championship within 2 years? No. But looking objectively at, like, just an assessment of MLS as a league and as, whether or not Atlanta United could come in and pull off the strategy they pulled off, like, yeah, I could see them winning a championship.
Jason, you signed off your article so well with your one of our old bits, telling Darren Eales what to do. Just told him to do it again in terms of winning MLS Cup. I loved that. You got anything else as we sign off here that you would like to tell Darren Eales to do?
No. My days of telling Darren Eales what to do are well and done now, and I'm God blessed for it to now have nothing else to say, honest to God, nothing else at all, other than to say thank you, because it means a lot. As we've been saying, it means a lot to me, to us as a podcast, and to just, sons and daughters of the state of Georgia, and even to the South, to fans from neighboring states who, like, just love soccer in the South. And, like, it's here, it's a real thing, it's not a fantasy. And the reason it's real and here is because of Arthur Blank and Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra and Tata Martino. So, the only thing there's left for me to say is thank you, and now I'm just going to go shut up until next season when you do something that makes me mad.
It started as a great segment on this podcast, and we will officially retire it now as Jason is done telling Darren Eales what to do. Jason, thank you so much. Give our best to Baby as a Smith, who is no longer a baby. And hopefully, like I said, we can do this again. And when we come up to Nashville next season, I'll just be crashing on your couch.
Yes, indeed. Definitely. Let's do that.
All right, Jason. Thank you so much, man.
All right. See you.
This has been the Mouths of the South podcast, a special edition here with Jason Smith. Thank you guys for listening. And back to your regularly scheduled programming here on the Mouths of the South podcast and DirtySouthSoccer.com. Thanks, guys.